You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Norbert McCloskey. Now, do you prefer Norb or Norbert?
Norb would be just fine.
Norb would be fine. Okay, good. So, Norb, the way we start the show is with a big question. Who are you? What do we need to know about your aspirations, your intentions, your labels you wear to start this conversation? Over the course of the hour, we will explore.
Oh, very good. Well,
start.
Well, first, thanks, Eric, for having me on. What a question
Another
to start with.
Another aspect of that and, double stream of...
I'll start by first saying what I'm not. I'm not really a morning person, so that question is really just a little bit overwhelming. But let me share a little bit about who I am. Usually when folks ask that kind of question, who are you, we start out by... attaching labels to ourselves, and we more or less describe what we are. So I'll begin there. What I am is a husband, father, grandfather. I'm a son. I'm a older brother, a sibling, a human being, a citizen here in Ithaca, the executive director of the Ithaca Free Clinic. I want to say that I'm a loving husband. I think you need to check with my wife Ann on that for a second opinion.
We talk about aspirations.
aspirations. That is always one of my aspirations. I'm not certain that I ever really truly hit the mark there, but I try to do my best. And Ann's very good at forgiving me when I don't hit that mark. Let's see. In terms of aspirations, are really. My aspirations are really kind of more or less who I am. I'm just an average, normal guy who came into this world and would like to leave this world knowing that I've contributed in some little way to making it better than the way it was when I entered here in the first place.
Yes.
And I don't claim to aspire to do great things. I don't claim to have huge superpowers or talents. I'm just your average, everyday guy trying to live out my life in a way that brings joy into my life. And that joy that comes into my life is created by helping others find that joy, helping others find a meaningful and purposeful life, helping others alleviate the problems or the sufferings or the challenges that are placed in front of them, really placed in front of all of us, and helping them find the means to overcome those challenges, learn from those challenges, grow from those challenges, and hopefully, by modeling that type of behavior, the other individuals I encounter in this life attempt to do the same thing. And if we all do a number of little things together, I think great things will come out of that.
Yeah. When you started this listing of who you are, it was all relational. You were one party to a relationship, and what you've just said just drives that point home in terms of how
well. Curious that you should point that out. Relationships are important to me.
Yeah.
I've never been one of those individuals who wants to tramp off into the wilderness and be self-sustaining and go it on my own, because that has not been the reality that I've experienced in life. There's a lot of talk about being self-sufficient and pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps and doing your own thing and making your own way in life. In reality, none of us actually do that.
Right.
We
right.
can claim that we've done that,
right.
but we've moved forward on tops of the shoulders and with the support of generations that have come before us. Yeah. None of us can live in this world alone. Someone asked me the other day, wouldn't it be nice if we were self-sustaining, if we could go our own way? And I said, well, the only way that would really work is if we had a community that would support us in that effort, because it really takes more than one individual, more than a group of individuals in order to accomplish anything,
right.
and to live in any well-meaning way in this world.
And again, I may be interpreting a little bit, but in order to, in a covenant relationship, we do for others what they cannot do for themselves, and we ask for ourselves what we cannot do for ourselves but need from others. And in that way, everybody gets something about what they need. And if others aren't willing to do it for us because they think we can do it, that forces us to learn, or at least to convince them that they were wrong. and it also forces us to look at others and say, well, could that person do that for themselves? So that we actually honor the fulfillment of individuals in community. It's a both and. It's nothing, no rugged individualism here, but no groupthink and no everybody caretaking too much. You know what I mean? It's the meeting the felt need and watching it go back and forth. That's the spirit of what I take your comments in.
Yeah, yes, it really is a balancing act. It's honoring the individual and the individual's talents and makeup and what that individual brings to the whole group, but at the same time, it takes a group, but not to the point where there is that groupthink, where you end up destroying all individualism or creating a group that separates itself from all the other groups. We have a terrible display of that right now in our country. You know, somebody asked me the other day, "What do you think's going on in the country? What's wrong here?" And I said, "Well, you know, those of us that live in here in America fail to see all of us as Americans. We've all broken up into little groups, and we all have our own sense of victimology. We all feel that we're getting the short end of the stick somehow. And rather than looking at how our differences make us unique and a contributor to the greater whole, we sort of build these walls, we silo ourselves off, we lob grenades over those walls, and now we're just terribly divided, and we do not see ourselves as a group or as a nation or as a tribe or as
I want to come back to that. I think part of it is we it's easier to live in dishonest peace, which is what we did for maybe 50 years. And now the dishonesty across the spectrum is just not acceptable. And we haven't found a way to be honest and safe and respectful for each other across the spectrum. There are no innocents here at this point.
I agree. And then, you know, in terms of that labeling, we stick a label, we hang our hat on that hook, and we shut off avenues of cooperation.
And it's a lot of work. I want to go through that. I want to explore your life and maybe some of those issues over the course of the hour. What should we play next? What should we play for? We opened with the simple gifts piece that you had suggested to make the transition from to the new hour. But what should we play right now?
Well, let's do Hard Times.
Oh, okay.
It's a reason for that.
Oh, yeah.
Let us pause in life's pleasures to count its many tears, while we all sop sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. While we seek mirth and beauty and music, light and game, there are frail forms fainting by the door. Their voices are silent, their pleading looks will say, oh, hard times come again no more. Mm-hmm. is a sign that is wafted across the troubled wave. 'Tis a wail that is heard upon the shore. It is a dirge that is murmured around the lowly grave. Oh, hard times come again no more. It's a song, a sigh of the weary. Hard times, hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin. Hard times come again no more. Oh, hard times.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Norb McCloskey. So Norb, the life that you have come to value, or what you've seen as valuable in life now, I imagine it's different than when you were 20 or 30 or 40 years old. What experiences have really shaped the way you look at what makes living worthwhile?
Well, that's an excellent question, and sometimes you don't even know where to begin with something like that.
Well, yeah, so just jump in.
Yeah, we don't typically think in those terms, do we?
Nope.
I can tell you one of my earlier experiences when I was in my early 20s that opened my eyes to how the world really was. I was in the Coast Guard at the time, stationed in Baltimore, Maryland, and part of my duties was making sure that everybody received their paycheck once a month. Uh-huh. And I was at that time functioning in a position that they called storekeeper. Uh-huh. And along with making sure that those that were on active duty got their paychecks, I was also tasked with going out in the community and finding those individuals who had retired from the Coast Guard and make sure that they got their retirement check.
Uh-huh.
All right. And one of these individuals was a challenge because he was homeless. He lived on the street and become basically a hardcore alcoholic. And so once a month, I had to go out and prowl the streets of inner city Baltimore. And this was back in the early 70s when inner city Baltimore was still an area called the Block, and they didn't have Inner Harbor. And the city had fallen on hard times because the loss of steel and shipping and whatnot. And I got to know this individual over the months that I had to go out and find him, and I just could not understand how someone could serve 20 years in the armed forces and end up basically homeless on the streets. Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of country did we live in where that is what was taking place in this individual's life, and why couldn't we find this person the help that they needed so that I didn't have to go down some dark alley once a month and find out where they were curled up in a doorstep to deliver, you know, a mm-hmm. Envelope full of cash.
You not only had to deliver the check, you had to cash the check and take it
yes.
cash.
Yep. And knowing that he didn't have the ability to really manage that money or do anything with it, it was probably going to be gone in a few days. I was married at the time. I had two young children, and I'm looking at myself. I'm looking at my family. I'm looking at what happened to this individual, and I'm going, this really could happen to anyone.
Yeah.
And what could I do to make that better? It was a terrible sense of frustration because at that point there wasn't much that I could do to make that better.
Right.
Except take that lesson with me and remember that at any point in our lives, life situations can change in such a way that we too could find ourselves living in the street without right. without the means to support ourselves.
Right. And I just want to, with addiction or mental health issues, and they're often intertwined, one of the things that I've learned over the years is you need people need 30 to 70 people in their team, so to speak, and that's people they see daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, once every 2 or 3 years, people who pay attention to them where it's reciprocal, where it's, the regard is reciprocal. You need that many people in order to be resilient and not get lost and not fail. And so many times with addiction or with mental health issues, people isolate. And people don't know how to maintain those connections, or the person really doesn't want them. And to some extent, they have a right to choose not to have them. But it's tough.
It is tough, and it really does take that large community working together to help all of us, everyone who's a member of that community, to reach their fullest potential.
Yeah. And it's a different community. If your community would be substantially different than your spouse's. Because there would be people that you would share and people that you wouldn't share. And that's how unique community is to each individual. And we don't often think of it in those terms. I want to this is because of your work with the health clinic. We'll pick this up later, but it just came in there, and it also came in with your emphasis on relationship from the very start of the show, how much you are aware that relationships make a huge difference, and when they're not there, we don't do well. How have you chosen to take that lesson from Baltimore and from chasing down the fellow with his pension payment and to your life? How has it changed your life to realize what happens when people get lost?
How's it changed my life?
It's not just an idea. I can't imagine you just live with it as an idea.
No, what it did, it gave me a real awareness, Eric, of how different other people's lives are from mine.
Right.
You know, I can't speak for anyone else, but I tend to go through life, or at least I did for a while, thinking everyone thought the same way I did, interacted with the world the same way I did, had the same values that I did, had the same worldview that I did. And working with this retired Coast Guardsman and a number of other experiences I've had in my life, I soon came to realize that my worldview and the way I interacted with the world wasn't necessarily the same as everyone else's. Mm-hmm. And that when I started to interact with other people, by being able to understand right up front that they're not seeing the world the same way I do, they're not interacting with the world the same way I do, they don't have the same thought processes as I do, gave me the ability to not fall in the kind of traps that sometimes destroy relationships.
Right. Where were you when you made that connection, that awareness that people have fundamentally different ways of viewing the world and I think also values about how to engage the world? What were you doing where that became important for you to realize, and then how did you implement it?
Okay.
I can share
this without violating anybody's confidentiality, because one, it happened a number of years ago. I had a close friend call me because another one of our friends was in the process of committing suicide and had done a pretty good job of it. And until we got to this individual's apartment, they were really in dire straits, and it meant calling the ambulance. It meant everything that unfolds for that kind of particular incident.
Sure.
And I had to try to grapple with an understanding of why someone that I thought I knew so well would attempt suicide.
Right. Why life?
And, yeah. Yeah. What? Why weren't they seeing the world the same way I was? What was going on in their world that I was completely unaware of? Why would they do this? And how could I not be conscious that this individual felt this way? And I came through that experience to understand after reading literature and talking to others and trying to come to some sort of grip with why this individual did this. And what is the thinking of the mental state behind that? I discovered that, by golly, not everyone looks at the world the same way I do. Uh-huh. and that I've got to honor the way they look at that world. And I have to understand that when we're in relationship, the way I see that relationship may not be the same way they view that relationship, right. And that can be good, and sometimes that can be not so good.
Right. And why do you find it, and I mean this is a serious question, why is it important to honor the way they view the world?
Well, first I have to recognize that I look at the world in a particular way, and it may not be the correct way. It may not be the best way. It's my way.
Or there may not be a correct way.
There may not be a correct way or a best way. And so I've got to allow the person across from me to see the world the way they want to see it, and not necessarily spend an inordinate amount of time trying to convince them that they're wrong in the way they look at the world. Right. We do a lot of that today. Yeah. All across the world, we spend a lot of time trying to convince others that ours is the correct way and theirs is not, and vice versa, rather than standing back and maybe asking the question that you just posed, maybe there is no one correct way.
Right. Or, I mean, I learned a lesson when I was not quite 21. I visited my step-grandmother in a nursing home, and in the course of 20 minutes, I was her father. I was her first husband who was murdered. I was her second husband who was my grandfather. I was her son who died on the beach in Normandy during World War II. I was her second son who was a merchant marine captain sailing around the world. And because I knew who the players were over the course of those 20 minutes, I knew who I was, and I didn't have to try to orient her. I could just respond in character because that's what she needed.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't cost me anything to be what she needed. And in her dementia, it was also 2 or 3 months before she died, and she was completely at peace in that conversation. So to me, we oftentimes accepting another view, and I didn't know this at the time. I just loved her, and I wasn't going to get in an argument with her that wasn't a useful thing. I just rolled with it. It's been a really important lesson.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
So when you have taken this, you know, we may be wrong, which is a good reason to honor other opinions, and there may not be a right answer, which is another good reason to honor other opinions. How did that affect your work life or your family life? How did that begin to play out in the way you lived?
Well, in my work life, it made me a much better workmate, much better supervisor. It allowed me to create the kind of space that permitted me to really listen to people
in a way.
Take time and really hear what they're saying, and to try to understand what it is that was driving their behavior or their thought process. And I'm hoping that I'm in a second marriage that it made me a better husband. Again, you're going to have to check with Ann. You know, get that second opinion. I believe everybody should get a second or a third opinion. And I'd like to think that it made me a better parent. It certainly made me a much better grandparent. Uh-huh. as the grandchildren came along. Go ahead.
This is good, and we will pick up more of these themes. I'm going to do the station ID. Tell me what music we should play next. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Norb McCloskey.
How about Bridge Over Troubled Waters?
Okay. Actually, that does fit quite well.
Side. Oh,
you're on the street. When evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. I'll take your part. Oh, when darkness comes and pain is all around, like a bridge over trouble.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Norb McCloskey. So Norb, you have had many careers, from the Coast Guard experience to working with Chevron and offshore drilling that you mentioned, and also other work. You have been a small business owner. You've been a nanny for your grandchildren, and you've also gone to work here at the Ithaca Health Alliance. Help connect the dots.
Well, I don't know if it's so much connecting the dots or just blundering from one thing to the next.
Well, but
really, yes, there are connecting
the
dots.
It's a good lesson, though, for those. Many people don't believe that life is becoming a good blunderer. For many of us, life will be how well we blundered through, rather than what we set out to do. And in the blundering, we can remember our intentions, which help us maintain some credibility as people. But the blundering is
yes.
How we got through.
Well, and you can blunder, I believe, as long as you have a good compass. Mm-hmm. Yep. and a map. And you're never really lost. You just don't know where you are in the map sometimes, as one of my mentors shared with me. But yes, I could go over a whole gamut of things. But the path that sent me here to Ithaca was back in, and I never thought I'd be old enough to say this, at the end of the last century. I was partners in a small business. We had done really well with that business. A Fortune 500 company wanted it, and they came in and said, would you sell it? And we huddled up for about 30 seconds and said, yes, we will. And, it gave me the opportunity to take some time off then. But you really can't take time off. I mean, I can't. I just can't sit still and do anything.
Busy.
So got involved with volunteer work in the area, ended up on a board for a small nonprofit. we were having some issues finding an executive director, and the board turned to me and said, would you be willing to do this? And I thought, oh boy, that's the last thing I really want to do right now. But we really needed someone in the office providing some sort of guidance. So I agreed to do it for 6 months. And 2 years later, I sat down with the board and said, you know, I've taken it really as far as I can go. And I found a really good individual to take my place. My wife and I were looking at moving maybe a little bit farther south. We were in central Pennsylvania at the time. We had a daughter and son-in-law and a grandson who lived here in Ithaca. Both the kids worked for Cornell, and they were up for promotions, and they were going to have some difficulty with childcare because they had another one on the way. And before we could get south without anybody really knowing, they called on the phone and said, could you, would you? And we said, okay, we can do this for 6 months. We'll come up and give you a hand during this transitional period. And that was 5 years ago. So we're more or less Ithacans now, though I don't know how long you truly have to live here in Ithaca, having come from somewhere else before you can claim to be an Ithacan.
Well, given the fact that 35% or 30% of the people here are students, they come and they go and they consider themselves Ithacans. And a significant chunk of the 70,000 others are transplants. Almost anybody can claim Ithaca identity, but very few people have much Ithaca history.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, very well. Then okay, we're Ithacans now, and we fell in love with the place. We've been coming up here for years, and so I proudly took on the position of you said nanny. I prefer Manny.
Manny. Okay.
Manny. Had the wonderful opportunity of being able to raise an infant again from birth until preschool, and a chance to be a parent, as you put it earlier, without all the stress. And it was really just a tremendous experience, really life-changing for my wife and I. And unfortunately, they grew up and they went off to school, and then my wife said, well, you just can't hang around the house. You have to go do something meaningful now. And
so how did you realize that 6 months wasn't viable? When did you realize that I'm committed to this?
I think the first time I put my grandson on the school bus and then came back and held my granddaughter in my arms, I said, I don't think I really want to let this go.
Wow.
This really spoke to my heart. Wow. Just recently, I helped to get my grandson on and off the bus his last day of second grade. Uh-huh. You know, and our granddaughter heads off to preschool every day, and we get a chance sometimes to take her and pick her up. Mm-hmm. So anybody out there who's contemplating doing that or having a chance to have that experience, I'd highly recommend it. It's addictive, though, and you know, once it was over, I really miss it.
Yeah, it's longing, but it will never come back.
It'll never come back. Yeah. But we see the grandchildren on a daily basis, and you really can't ask for much more than that.
And may you be blessed to know your great grandchildren.
Well, thank you for that.
On in a similar way of how the cycles may work.
Mm-hmm.
You, like so many people of I'm presuming your generation, you have energy and talent and who knows how much life ahead of you. So you're not twiddling your thumbs and you're not just engaging in entertainment. Why did your wife kick you out of the house to go get another how is it that you live the way you do? You need something to engage you that you find meaningful.
I think you find purpose in life by engaging and engaging in relationships, mm-hmm, and giving back. You know, you just reach a point in your life when you realize here's your opportunity now to give back. And this opportunity to work with the Ithaca Health Alliance and the Ithaca Free Clinic presented itself, and for whatever reason, the board was, you know, crazy enough in one small moment to say, okay, we're going to give you a shot. Mm-hmm. And I've been there a little over a year now. It's just an organization with just an essential mission that's run by radically committed volunteers, and it really provides a stopgap, that final place to go for members of our community who cannot access healthcare anywhere else.
Right. Right. And so, yeah, so tell us a little bit about the mission and the people you serve.
Well, the mission is to facilitate access to health care for the uninsured and underinsured and the poorly served population here, populations here in the community. Basically, you make sure that health care at a primary level is available to those who need it and can't get it somewhere else. Most of our patients that come through the door are hardworking men and women. They're employed. Mm-hmm. They don't have health insurance, or they can't afford health insurance. And they come to us usually when they're almost forced to,
right?
Because something has happened in their lives and they have some sort of symptom or health condition that needs to be addressed,
and they have no one else to turn to.
They really don't, and we're happy to be able to provide that.
And how do people find out about your service?
Well, you know, listservs and that sort of thing. Mostly word of mouth.
So the clients who come in, they found out about other clients,
yes,
who've used it.
Other clients, other social service agencies,
sure,
that say this is where you need to go.
Yeah.
And we have a diverse population of clients, young to old, multicultural, mm-hmm, speak numerous languages. And all provided services by volunteers, the MDs all the way down to college interns, who all come together to ensure that these services are available for those in need.
All of the direct service people, as I understand it, are volunteers.
They're all volunteers.
And you as a manager and maybe a couple of other people in that management kind of coordination role are the only paid staff.
That's correct. Very small paid staff. And we see our role in finding the resources and the support that will allow those volunteers to do what they do to the best of their ability.
Mm-hmm. And how many, you say you've got all sorts of professions, alternative medicine volunteers. This way you can offer things that wouldn't even be available under many healthcare plans, and it's still available on a limited basis.
That's correct. Yep.
How many people are volunteering in these professional capacities?
Well, we have about 120 volunteers registered on the books. At any one time, about 60 are active, and, mm-hmm, and it comes and goes depending on the needs,
sure,
or what program we're running at any given time. And
any given day that you're open for what, 4 hours at a time?
Or we're open. We're open Mondays from 2 to 6. We're open Thursdays from 4 to 7, and then Tuesdays we're open from 3 to 7 o'clock. Most of those are by appointment only, where we're providing our holistic care services.
Sure. So people do need to plan ahead and try to get an appointment, and you have open walk-in hours too.
We have open walk-in hours on Mondays and Thursdays.
Yeah.
It's always good to get there in time to register, because it is first come, first serve. And unfortunately, even if we have several medical practitioners on staff, sometimes the crowds are such that we have to cut off at a certain point because we're just not going to be able to see everybody.
Right. And one of the things that impressed me, in part because I have a daughter who works in healthcare, and she has 20,000 or 17,000 people who access her services in 10 counties in New York, but there's another 20,000 people who don't get them because they either don't trust them or they don't know about them. And finding those is really hard. But your organization, one of its missions is to connect people to whatever services they're available once they come in and access one of your services. And that is a huge community service.
That is correct. We do a number of things beyond just providing,
sure,
that integrated health care. If someone comes in, we're going to make sure that if they're eligible for Medicaid, they can see one of our Medicaid insurance navigators and get enrolled. We're going to make sure that if they have housing needs or food needs or domestic abuse needs, mm-hmm. we're going to connect them to folks that can help them, and we're going to make sure that they get that help, because any number of things our factors go into affecting our health. Mm-hmm. Food and shelter is primary. The stressors that come in with relationships are very primary. We need to address those.
Right.
Finances are can be incredibly stressful. So we do financial advocacy work for those that have gotten themselves into medical debt. And we've been successful in helping people either lower or eliminate that debt.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to shift the topic for the next section of the show, but shall we play, which one should we play, Bill Withers or Joe Cocker?
Let's play Bill Withers.
Okay. And this is Lean On Me.
Just call.
listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Norb McCloskey. So Norb, the way we end the show is with a question about what do you do to take care of yourself, to kind of keep your life more or less in balance so that you're ready for all those relationships you're involved in? And how do you know you need to do it? And so kind of intellectually, emotionally, physically, what do you do to take care of this ship that you sail in, this body and mind and heart that you carry?
Oh, well, the first thing I have to admit is that I do a terrible job.
You and about a third or half of the world.
Yeah, at self-care. Though, between my wife and my staff who are making sure that I'm taking care of myself, some things get addressed. Gosh, physically, you know, long walks and finding places where there's just peace and quiet, where you can do some reflecting.
Yeah.
Now, if the reflecting becomes ruminating,
that becomes,
and I recognize that, then what I do is I go out and I force myself to be among people. Uh-huh. Back to that relationship thing. Sometimes
so you have more of a balance than you let on at the beginning.
Yeah, probably. You know, you can get these senses of overwhelm.
Yeah.
And you can let that can carry you away. And then what I'll do is I recognize that that is taking me to a really bad place.
Yeah.
I get in the car and go down to the mall and just do some window shopping and talk to people.
Yeah.
And really within 30 minutes of actually talking and engaging with other human beings, I'm back to myself again. Mm-hmm. Intellectually, I just try to keep current with the best information that's available for what I'm doing at any given moment. Sometimes some quiet periods of meditation, not as often as I used to when I was a little younger. And I just have a terrible nutritional program. I take that multivitamin once a day, my CQ10.
But
drink lots of water.
Right. But terrible nutritional program. You also sound a little bit proud of it.
Well,
what is it that you enjoy about food, and why? How does it give you pleasure?
Oh,
and it's a terrible nutritional plan. I mean,
well I don't know if it's a terrible nutritional plan. It's I enjoy food.
Yeah,
I enjoy. And my wife is a marvelous cook.
So she's and that way you've got gender roles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and she shoos me out of the kitchen, though I think she would like me to do the dishes a little bit more often than I attempt to do. Our son grew up to be a chef, you know, 4-star restaurant. So food's always been a part of the family, and we eat foods from all around the world. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was a youngster, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, I would only eat vanilla ice cream and peanut butter sandwiches. I didn't really want to explore foods from around the world.
You're on the cutting edge of those white and yellow foods.
Very much so. But then when I was in high school, I had an opportunity to travel overseas to Germany over the Christmas holidays with the German club, and I'd made myself a promise. Whatever was sat in front of me, I was going to eat it, and it did do things for me. It opened up a fantastic world of culinary delights that I had been missing for all those years, and it introduced me to what I call real beer.
Right.
And ruined me on you know, your standard off the shelf American beers. So it's a joy to live in an area where there are so many microbreweries.
Right. So I also get a sense that's a lesson that you may have the lesson of I will take whatever is presented in front of me. Is that a lesson that you generalized in other pieces of your life?
Yes. At least in my life, I reached a certain point of acceptance where instead of trying to fight against everything or whine about everything, you know, this is what is in front of me. This is what's being offered. This may be the best it's going to get. What am I going to do with it? How can I make the most of this?
Yeah.
As opposed to just grumbling all the time.
Well, and that is a daily practice of resetting your expectations.
Yes. Yes. And one last thing for self-care, sure. I cannot recommend laughter enough.
No,
you really can't. Yes. For me anyway, laughter is just a tremendous healing product. And so I love the laugh. I love a good story. And I love to make fun of myself.
Mm-hmm. Have you always been one who laughed?
You know, I think so.
Yeah, I would have guessed so, but I, you know, and how has your laughter changed over the years?
Oh, wow! How has it changed? Well, I guess if it's changed in any way, there's just more of it. Mm-hmm. There's more of it, and probably less laughter associated with all the calamities of life that befall other people.
Right.
And more laughter directed at the silly things that I do or don't do in my own life.
Yeah. I think a lot of people who value humor become more aware of the absurdity of themselves.
Yes.
And that's a very healthy thing. I'm working on it. Norb, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Well, it's good to be here. Thank you.
And we're going to close with a little help from my friends. Do you want to say anything about it?
This year, the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band,
the anniversary
was 50 years. It was the very first album I ever bought, and I've been a Beatles fan ever mm-hmm. since. And this is just one of my favorite tunes, and I think is this the Joe Crocker version?
The live from Woodstock version.
Woodstock, which I think is probably one of my all-time favorite covers for this song.
Okay, well, here we go.
Thank you.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh baby, have you found? Someone to love.